It's summer, it's August, and I know in conversation many of you have been on vacation or are about to go on vacation. Looking at the attendance here, some of you are on vacation. So it's a time when the usual, ordinary routines of life are traded in for something else, some other place, some other locale, some other routine. And if you're a child, or you were once one, you know that such things can feel like an adventure, a journey, getting to go on summer vacation. Maybe then it's appropriate then to come here this summer day to be reminded by our lessons from Genesis and the letter to the Hebrews that the Bible is primarily concerned with a bunch of people on a journey, on an adventure. When the Bible begins, everything is settled. Everything is situated in a good garden. But a couple chapters later, Adam and Eve must leave the garden. They must venture forth. And so a journey begins. A journey, though, marked now with a particular end, death, as a result of Adam and Eve's disobedience. From there forward, human history, at least as the Bible tells it, is no tame, well-ordered, stay-at-home affair. And it won't be too many chapters later that Noah will sail forth, venture over dark waters. But the story of God's people really gets going. The story of Israel with the journey of an old Iraqi couple, Abraham and Sarah. Abraham ventures forth, as today's lesson in the Hebrews puts it, not knowing where he's going. But they venture forth not only sort of geographically, heading west to a different location, but they venture forth in some sense spiritually, theologically, to a different location in their lives and in this world. God had promised that Abraham would be the father of a great nation, even though Sarah, we read, was too old. She herself was barren. And even though Abraham was, in the rather impolite words of Hebrews, one as good as dead. Yet by the power of the Lord, Abraham and Sarah have a child, a future they didn't know they had when they began their journey. A destination very different than the one they perhaps thought of initially. And so a family, the family of Israel, is born. Through a weird series of events, which is too long to go into on a summer day here on Sunday, that family ends up a multitude and ends up in slavery in Egypt. Some of the people adjusted to the slavery. They would work hard. They got 3 meals a day. They accommodated, they adjusted to the staying put, not moving, contented with what they had. And yet some cried out, and the Lord heard their cries and called Moses to lead them forth out of slavery. And so a fresh new journey begins, a journey we call Exodus. The third great journey in the Old Testament is the journey out of exile. Assyria and Babylon had made war on Israel. And those who once were slaves but now free, now found themselves home in the promised land, become virtual slaves yet again as Jerusalem is destroyed and the whole nation carted off into exile. And yet there were some who said, you know, Babylon's really not that bad. Let's just settle down. Let's just assimilate. Adjust to the lifestyle, to the culture of those who've captured us. But there were some who cried out. And the Lord remained faithful to the promise he had made to Abraham on a starry night. And he wouldn't let them be content with just sitting still. They're liberated, they're sent back home, And Isaiah prophesied a homecoming. A homecoming on a journey that would be made easier. Easier by God. And that Jerusalem would be rebuilt. In all these stories, the Lord, the God of Israel, beckons, calls forth, evokes, pushes, shoves even us out on a journey where we do not know where we are going. How can we know the way? And we shouldn't be surprised at this. We've been reading Luke's gospel all summer long. And Luke presents Jesus as on one long road trip. And Jesus' followers are presented just in that way, as followers, trudging along after Jesus. And Luke's telling they don't just sit there and take lecture notes at all the interesting things he says. They don't sit and meditate and ponder on moral complexities. They're just up and moving. They're just attempting to keep up as they go from place to place, wondering where they will eat next, wondering why Jesus sends them out, amazed and perplexed. The reason I mention all of that is this image of journey is one of the ways, perhaps even a main way, the church has tended to characterize our relationship with Christ. And yet, let's be honest. There's something about us, like Israel of old, where we would just prefer to settle in one place. Oh, so if we're slaves, we can just sort of accommodate. We can assimilate. We can put some roots down. It'll be okay. Or even the would-be followers of Jesus who say, you know, can I bury my father first? Can I take care of my business first? But that doesn't seem to be the way it is with Jesus. He's always on the move. So in some sense, discipleship must mean being on the move, being on the road with Jesus. And so I think it's a mistake to think about being Christian as believing for sure a certain set of propositions, a certain set of statements. It's more than understanding a certain book. It must mean, in some deep way, it means to be on the move, on a journey, and the willingness to get up and go. In holy baptism, Christ makes us all sojourners, all itinerants. Jesus himself says he was homeless, nowhere to lay his head, no permanent resting place. And if we are to follow, then we too follow that path. It was a few months ago, I remember, one of the U.S. presidential candidates said if he were elected, he wouldn't allow anybody to immigrate to the United States from the Middle East unless they were Christian. And a smart reporter asked back, well, how would you know if they're Christian? What would be your test? I thought, this is going to be interesting, right? What things would you ask the person to affirm? What kind of statement must they say? What kind of faith must they exhibit for the border guard to let you in, if this would be Christian or not? And in fact, at least according to the letter of Hebrews, where the author speaks of faith as a living, active, moving sort of thing, it may be the case the sheer getting up and willing to go halfway across the globe is a kind of precursor to the faith anyway. A willingness to go where you do not know where the end may be. The author speaks of faith in action, a journey of people who have been pushed and shoved by the Lord to venture forth in obedience to the one who calls to us. Hebrews invites us to think about the faith in this way, not as a list of questions or a catechism, but rather as a journey, a venturing forth just like Abraham and Sarah. In today's gospel, as Jesus tells his disciples, as he's on the way to Jerusalem himself, he says to them, do not be afraid. And in our honest moments, we admit we are afraid to venture forth. Too easy to hold tight to old patterns, comfortable security. And we ask ourselves questions. Well, is the trip going to be worth it? Where are we heading anyway? Are there going to be difficulties along the way? Because I'd like to know ahead of time. Where will we stay? What will we eat? Who will we be with? The Bible speaks of a God forever on the move, peripatetic. And if we want to relate to Jesus, we must be courageous enough to move along with him. He says to them, do not be afraid. But where's he moving to? He is making his move to the grave. He is making his move to his own suffering. He is making his move to his own humiliation. He's making his move to confront the powers and the principalities of this world. That's where he's going. That's the journey he invites us on. Well, no wonder he told them not to be afraid. He's moving towards death. He's moving towards suffering. He's moving towards humiliation, and he says, do not be afraid. Has anybody ever not been afraid? And in case we're foolish enough to think that we're really not afraid, Jesus casually mentions, as though it really, you know, it's just one more thing, as long as you're not afraid, sell your possessions. He invites us on a journey that will include giving up stuff, the stuff we cling to. Okay, then he tells them one more thing. You know, as long as you're not afraid and you're selling your possessions, now be dressed for action. Have your lamps lit. Who's coming? Who's coming like a thief in the night? The Son of Man is coming like a thief in the night at an unexpected hour. The hour is dawn. The Son of Man is coming unexpectedly at dawn, out of the tomb, out of the grave. What we thought was a bad end of a journey, a bitter end, a tearful end, become something else. The letter to the Hebrews reminds us that this is an adventure, a pilgrimage, a journey. It's a path. It's a way of life. So at our best moments, we come to places like this on Sunday morning, not to settle down, not to settle in, not to be satisfied that we've somehow reached an end. Rather, we come here to summon up the fortitude, to catch a glimpse of the future, to see where the journey is going. We come to catch our breath, all in order to venture forth again, to follow where the Lord has gone. Yes, it leads to death. Yes, it appears like that's the end of the journey. But the Son of Man comes at dawn, in resurrection. He is the path. He is the way. He is the way forward. He is the way to life abundantly. He is the way through resurrection to life everlasting. Amen.